inflation. Takes it like a hidden taxation. Initiated interest rates to get the bank rate to create money with the loans that they're giving out daily. That means our money is dead, and we gotta pay back more than 100%. No wonder they why the middle class is going under, where the ones above them gotta cover income to collect. And many have no access to banking.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. to 1.30 p.m. If you're listening live, thank you for your patience as we got through a little technical glitch. I want to remind you, in the studio, Alex Solis, Solis Digital Assets, Augie the Contrarian, and TradingView columnist Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy. Also check out his website, SeekingCryptos.com. And actually, get two computer screens, put the TradingView.com column on one and Seeking Cryptos on the other, and you will be well served by that. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll go to fintech attorney Greg Karsh about the SEC, CFTC, Senate Banking Committee hearing that we were talking about in the first half of the show. I also want to remind everyone that you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all the major social platforms. You just Google Henry Rain Show, you'll find that. Also, the meetup is coming up, a monthly meetup now. I'm not even keeping track of whether first, second, third, fourth, fifth, because they just seem to be ongoing, and the membership's growing, the RSVPs are growing. But it will be where it is always, and that is Mocha Joe's on Cortez Road in Bradenton. That's going to be February 24th at 3:30 p.m. And we'll go to about 5 p.m. That's just a couple weekends away. And we're expecting possibly even a bigger turnout than last time, if that's possible. And I'm sure the people at Mocha Joe's are like, oh, goodness, well, what are we going to do? We had a little technical glitch on the Senator Rounds and Chairman of the CFTC, Giancarlo's, comment where he was getting ready to explain HODL to the senator. We're going to go to that right now and pick up where we left off and probably be joined by Greg Karsh, attorney, with us then.
Is Bitcoin, or are these as currently being traded, are they a commodity, or are they security, or are they both?
What's so challenging about Bitcoin is it has characteristics of multiple different things. One of the phrases that's often used is that Bitcoin is a medium of exchange, a store of value, or a means of account. Well, those three things have different connotations to them. If it's a medium of exchange, then it's like a currency-like instrument. And yet, as we've seen, a number of means of exchanges have been closed to Bitcoin. There was recently a Bitcoin conference that stopped accepting Bitcoin for registrants because they couldn't process the payments. So, but yet it's still spoken of as perhaps a means of account. And in that case, it has implications from the Fed and currency. From our point of view, when it's used as a store of value, then it's very much like an asset, like a commodity. And in fact, what we hear a lot of is people buying and holding. If you go on to the Twitter universe, you'll see a phrase, HODL, which means hold on for dear life. And the thinking is that they buy it and hold it. In fact, I mentioned in opening remarks my 30-year-old niece who bought Bitcoin years ago, and she's an HODL. She says, I'm going to own it. I don't know what's going to come of it, but I want to hang on to it. And she's not a fraudster or a manipulator. She's just a kid and believes in it. And, you know, I was fascinated talking to her. And I think she represents a lot of folks that think there's something in this. I want to hold on to it. And so in that regard, from our view, it's a commodity. And if there's a derivative on that, we regulate it. The problem is in the cash market, we don't have regulatory authority. It means we can't set the standards. But what we will do, and we are doing, is looking for fraud and manipulation. And we intend to be very aggressive, if nothing else, so that people like my niece can have some security that there's not fraudsters and manipulators out there. And there are far too many of them.
Well, our guests will be joining us in just a second, but here in the studio we have TradingView columnist Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy, and the Contrarian, Augie, and from Solis Digital Assets, Alex Solis, Just picking up where we were, it got interrupted. Your thoughts about that commentary?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And when he's saying Bitcoin, I think he's talking to the whole crypto, the whole crypto sphere. He's not just focusing in on Bitcoin, because Bitcoin trades, it's a commodity. It's not something that will ever be a security. And I think I was reading somewhere, one of the former SEC heads was saying there is a 0.01 chance of them taking a bit, or thinking, categorizing Bitcoin as a security. However, the difference is because Bitcoin's already mined. It's already out there. If I have it, I can sell it to you. If I have a bicycle, I can sell it to you. However, if I come to you, Henry, and I say, Henry, I want you to invest into my bicycle shop, and I'm going to sell bicycles, and you're going to make money from it, that's when it becomes a security, because now I'm not selling you a product. I am selling you the hope that you're going to profit from it, and that's the difference between a security and a commodity, and these are every single ICO that you see out there. And I agree with the SEC chairman on that. They need to regulate these things.
I think they're talking generically when they use the term Bitcoin. It's about all of the various so-called speculative currencies.
I agree. And when I mean regulatory, I don't mean over-regulate. I'm just saying they need to make the securities laws that are out there to protect consumers.
Well, we've got someone standing by to help us sort through all of this, and he's much better qualified than any of us here in the studio to parse through these definitions. He's Greg Karsh. He's a fintech lawyer, financial technical lawyer. You're with WorldBlock Legal PA, focusing on business transactions for startup and emerging growth companies in the cryptocurrency and blockchain space. He and his partner are located in downtown Tampa. The website is worldblocklegal.io, worldblocklegal.io, and we'll give you the office phone number in just a little bit so you can contact them with your related questions and issues. He has a background not only in corporate law, but in business entity formation, governance, restructuring, mergers and acquisitions, and securities regulation. So he had all this before he was brought to the cryptocurrency and blockchain world. He is an alumni of the
USF?
I don't know about that, University of Alabama, so you know.
Oh. Roll Tide.
We're not going to hold that against him, but
Roll
we
tie.
Are going to welcome him. Greg Karsh, welcome to the Henry Rain Show.
Thank you. It's glad to, I'm thrilled to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here and making time on a weekend for us. So you heard that clip, or at least parts of it. You heard the talk about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general versus securities. Let's go more general in a second, because you're just coming in with your opinion. First of all, let me ask, did you watch the hearings live, or did you watch them on demand? How did you get your information about the hearings?
I watched them live, so I tuned in on Tuesday morning because I was anxious to see what they were going to say, and particularly what Chairman Clayton was going to say. He's been pretty consistent and pretty clear on his position on ICOs, and that's something that we do a lot of with our clients, is trying to counsel them on ICOs and how to navigate that emerging sort of regulatory environment that at least the clients that are coming to us are thinking about. 2017 was a big, big year for ICOs, of course, and most of the ICOs, I tend to agree with Chairman Clayton that the ICOs are done almost entirely as securities for a lot of the reasons that you've sort of touched on already. If you're investing money for profit, and it's the Howey test, of course. Most people in crypto have heard of the Howey test now. So go ahead.
We're going to get into some of the detail here in a second, but trying to find out, did you find it a positive? Were you optimistic? Mm-hmm. Were you pleasantly surprised? How did you take it in general?
I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. I think that the general tone was amenable to the space. I thought it was interesting that several of the senators seemed very well versed on blockchain technology, which was good to see them expand on that. I expected Clayton to be hard on ICOs, and his opening was very hard. I thought that surprised me a little bit that he came out so hard on that. But I think that there was a certain understanding who he was in front of and wanted to come down a little hard on that. But I think he's generally on point with that, and I think there's a need to regulate that and ensure that that's being handled. Those securities are being handled in compliance with a lot of the security laws that we already have in place.
Well, that's a question.
Investors.
That's a question for me. Now, when they say they need to regulate it more, do they need to regulate it more, or do they need to enforce the current regulations that are already out there?
Enforce the current ones. I think there's plenty of room to regulate the ICOs in the existing structure of the securities laws. I think they're broad enough that you can follow and you can they can do it, I think, the way that they're sort of starting to do that. If you're not registering as securities, we've seen a number of cases in the last part of 2017 where they're forcing these companies to give the money back to the investors, which is one of their remedies.
We're speaking with Greg Karsh, worldblocklegal.io, and his practice is focused on blockchain and cryptocurrency, ICOs, et cetera. But he didn't just roll into Tampa and fall off the attorney bus as a blockchain attorney. So you have all this other background. How did you come from the more traditional business law into this world?
Well, I took a seminar course back in 2013, 2014, and Bitcoin came up in that seminar. And so I started, and I ended up writing a paper in connection with that seminar that ended up getting published in the Florida A&M Law Review. And in the course of that seminar, I started to research both Bitcoin, and then I came across Ethereum at the time that was just starting to emerge and do their ICO. And then blockchain technology was underlying it, and it occurred to me that this is going to be big because the blockchain can do a lot of very interesting things through transferring assets online and just having a verified public ledger of transactions, and there's lots of opportunities there for using that technology. And Senator Cotton, I think, got onto that a little bit in the hearing.
2013. He is like ancient in this.
Yeah,
day.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You're an old timer.
Yeah.
I've been following it for quite some time.
We're going to call Grandpa Law. Grandpa Law.
We got to pick his brain before he falls in the assisted living facility there.
Right.
Let's go back to the committee hearing. We have Senator Warner of Virginia here queued up, and he is going to talk about the transformational. I imagine if Attorney Greg Karsh in 2013 was writing this article that got published in the Florida A&M School of Law Review, maybe he had a little foresight, but it sounds to me of all the senators there that
he was definitely the most knowledgeable.
And had a vision going forward.
I thought you were going to say Elizabeth Warren.
No, we can eventually get to that. I know you're chomping at the bit with that, but we'll stay a little bit more practical here with Senator Warner.
I usually agree with my friend from Louisiana. I think we may be on top of something that is transformational, and I don't think you can separate the underlying distributed ledger or blockchain from some of these crypto assets. And if we had the same rate of increase that we've, the next 2 years that we've had, we're talking now a couple hundred billion, we'd be at north of $20 trillion caught up in this area by 2020. And I think you...
I'm sorry, I just got to have to say, $20 trillion, that's a lot of billable hours for an attorney.
That is.
let me get back to this, not digress too much.
I remember back, I was lucky enough to get a cell phone business back in the early 80s, and everybody thought it was going to be a small business, and they were wrong, and I got rich. I think we're looking at the same kind of transformation about to take place, and we are going to have to wrap our arms around it. We've talked about some of the consumer protection issues, but we've got money laundering issues. We've got cybersecurity issues. A third of the Bitcoin exchanges have been cyber hacked between 2009 and 2015. I'm not exactly sure what the right regime ought to be, but I would argue that, well, I commend the Treasury Secretary for putting a working group together, but I would argue this is the reason we created FSOC in the first place, that this rises potentially to the level of a systemically relevant.
If I could just paraphrase Senator Warner here, I am the crypto stud of the Senate.
I am.
Right now.
And they were wrong. I got rich. I love that. I'm going to put that on my title block.
Maybe we'll get to the actual substance of from the either Clayton or Giancarlo here.
Event. I'd just be curious whether you believe, and I commend what both of you are trying to do, but whether this ought to elevate to an FSOC level analysis.
So, Senator, I had the same question you had, which is there's a big rise here. If it does keep going, is this a systemic issue? Which is one of the reasons we brought it up at FSOC, talked about it at FSOC. I again commend the Treasury Secretary for forming the working group. I want to go back to separating ICOs and cryptocurrencies. ICOs that are securities offerings, we should regulate them like we regulate securities offerings. End of story.
I'm going to make sure, because I've got a couple more points. Thank you, Senator. Quickly, on the issue of disclosure, sometimes what we're seeing is not a problem of absence of disclosure. It's false disclosure. And false disclosure is often fraud, and I think we need to step in there. But just in terms of discussion, as Chairman Clayton mentioned, we have begun discussions at FSOC. In addition, there's also been discussions led by Chairman Clayton at the Financial Stability Board and also at IOSCO, which is the International Organization of Securities Commissioners. So these discussions are taking place at the right levels of debate, but there's so much more to be done.
So before we go to Attorney Greg Karch and find out what in the world FSOC is, I do have to say you're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay, Bradenton. And, Greg, what's this FSOC there they're talking about that needs to step in?
Good question. The FSOC is what is called the Financial Stability Oversight Council. And that was established under Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. And what it essentially is, it's sort of a comprehensive monitoring of the stability of our nation's financial system. It comes out of the 2008 crisis, et cetera. And so it's a collection, it's a council that is looking at financial stability, promoting market discipline, and responding to emerging risks in the stability of the financial system. So this is the first time I've heard anyone bring that up in this context. So that'll be interesting to see. They're talking about financial stability, and that's an interesting concept that, in the disruption sense, it'll be interesting to see where they go with that.
So are they talking financial stability of the economy or an industry, or do you?
Well, of the nation, it's specifically the nation's financial system. I mean, it's in response to the mortgage crisis and the idea, and I think that Commissioner Giancarlo sort of referred to this in some of his testimony when he talked of if the blockchain had been around in 2008, maybe we could have averted some of those liquidity issues that led to the crisis and so on. And so that's the kind of thing I think that they're looking at and hopefully they're looking at it like, how can we use the blockchain to avert those crises rather than, is this a threat to financial stability? Because there's two different ways to look at it.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. I don't see, a Bitcoin or any of these, the market itself in general as a stability issue.
Not at $400 billion.
Well, not at $400 billion. I mean, it's pennies. I mean, we lost $5 trillion in a week.
$1 trillion.
Yeah, so, as derivatives start to come on and you have futures markets and stuff like that, then you have that question of the financial stability, not because of the underlying asset, but because of the derivatives market behind it, just like in the housing market crash. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's one of the things that hasn't come about. It's starting to. They touched on the derivative market in the commodities and the futures trading and those that has just started to come up here at the end of 2017 and will continue, I'm sure. But that's exactly right. I mean, that's sort of the institutional investors really have not gotten into this yet. And so to the extent that there are derivative markets and ways for them to start to get into the mix, this is really just the beginning.
Yeah. Can you imagine a 3x velocity shares on Bitcoin? On Bitcoin, you know, derivatives. Yeah, that'd be almost like a crazy.
Well, I want to thank both of you for queuing up the work I put into pre-production here so that I could play the clip where they talk about Bitcoin futures with Senator Warner and Commissioner Giancarlo and Chairman Giancarlo and Chairman Clayton.
Let me ask Chairman Giancarlo, you know, what we did, and one of the things I'm concerned about was that I think we may have moved too fast on allowing, for example, futures trading on Bitcoin. And I just wonder, you know, you've allowed future trading contracts on Bitcoin, yet the SEC has not allowed ETFs. I'm just worried that we need a much more coordinated effort, because I think the potential writ large amongst crypto assets and the underlying blockchain could be as transformational as wireless was years ago, and I think we're going to need a much more coordinated effort. I know my time's expired, but if you could both quickly comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
I believe it is critically important that we coordinate on this. I believe that we are all both individually and collectively understanding our authorities, understanding this new technology, working around it. There was a communication amongst myself, Chairman Clayton, the Treasury Secretary, and others in connection with Bitcoin futures. And, you know, Bitcoin futures are quite different than the Bitcoin market. The Bitcoin is an anonymous area. Bitcoin futures is fully transparent to the regulator. Bitcoin retail. Bitcoin futures, mostly institutional and high net worth. Bitcoin futures regulated. Bitcoin futures regulated, Bitcoin unregulated. And with Bitcoin futures, we're now having visibility into underlying spot markets and data from those markets that we would not otherwise have.
Completely agree on coordination. I break it down into three areas. There's this great technology that I agree with you has promise. There are these pure cryptocurrencies, which we need to take a look at across FinCEN, Treasury, CFTC, Fed, and then there are securities offerings that are called ICOs that should be undertaken as securities offerings consistent with our regulatory regime.
Attorney Gray Karch, let me also give your website out, worldblocklegal.io. That's worldblocklegal.io. We've got one more clip after this, and then we'll get into more general questions about your practice. But I think it's a good time to give the office phone number out, and we'll be doing this again, 813-452-2000, 813-452-2000, or just go to worldblocklegal.io to get the contact information. Your thoughts on the Bitcoin futures and what Chairman Giancarlo and Chairman Clayton said?
Well, it's interesting the different approach to or jurisdictions, essentially, of two agencies, because Giancarlo is saying, you know, we can't really regulate Bitcoin, but if we have a futures derivative market, we can regulate the derivative market and we can exert some influence and understand a little bit more what's going on there through that sort of mechanism, whereas the SEC has a more direct regulatory mandate because they can more directly regulate securities when you're in that field. So that's the distinction between ETFs and mutual funds, and you know a Bitcoin ETF, which has been attempted over 2017 several times, and a number of people are trying to get that through, but the SEC is saying no. But because it's not a regulated market, but if derivatives come about and you're sort of indirectly have some insight into the market, maybe that opens up the potential for ETFs and so on, because now you're getting a little bit of insight into the markets. But that's the sort of the challenge and the distinction between the two agencies, and the SEC is not ready to go there because it's more of a direct.
Do you think it's going to be more of an ETF, or do you think it'll introduce an ETN that follows the futures market?
Yeah, potentially. That may be a first step. But to date, what I've seen so far is people attempting to do the ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs and so on. So that's an interesting distinction, though, between the two and how they can regulate it, in a sense.
Now, I have to get away from my computer screen more, but there was this an all-day, all-market summit webcast from New York City. You and I had talked about maybe trying to get up there. From sponsored by Yahoo.com and a lot of big names there, and I forget the speaker, but that question came up, and the expert, whoever she may have been, said that bankers and institutions were very trepid about trying to deal with ETNs, and she thought it was the lesser likelihood.
Well, you know,
what is an ETN, by the way?
It's an exchange traded.
No.
I'm not, you know, yeah, well, it's
Greg,
based on something that doesn't exist, because the SVXY, those types of UVXY, those are ETNs, and they're very highly volatile. There's nothing underlying that's backing the asset, unlike an ETF, which you're buying stocks across the board. You have some underlying assets.
Well,
that would
speak to what the expert was
Absolutely.
Saying on that. But, Greg, what is an ETN?
Well, it's exchange-traded notes. So instead of being tied to securities but they're tied to unsubordinated debt securities and they're trading on debt as opposed to an ETF, which would be trading on an exchange and sort of geared towards a group of stocks that would be similar to like any other kind of ETF exchange traded fund where they're trying to mimic the market on the stock market, or a collection of stocks on the stock market. So an exchange traded note is just trading on the subordinated notes and stuff.
They exist everywhere. Yeah. But and they're worried about Bitcoin, and SVXY dropped, 80-some%, 90%? That was crazy. But can I ask a question real quick, Henry?
The last stuff, we'll probably got into Louise a little bit for our audience, but go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to ask, what do you think, you know, they didn't play the whole thing at Clayton, but what do you think the steps have to have before they introduce an ETF? Do you think the banks actually have to have a supply of Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies that are in, like, like the COMEX vault before they can start trading in ETFs similar to the GLD?
That'll be one of the conditions to anyone who starts an ETF, is that they'll have to have reserves for that. But there are people willing to do that, so I don't think that's necessarily the holdup. I think, again, what they've come out with and their reason is it's just not a regulated market, so they're not comfortable with it because they haven't figured out a way to regulate the market. And they're able to regulate other markets in other ETF scenarios or ETN scenarios. They have regulation over those markets, but don't really have regulation over this market. So
how do they regulate the hurricane market? Because you can buy futures contracts on hurricanes. I mean, you can. Yeah. I can go buy weather contracts. Yeah.
Let me get back to something that you both of you were saying. I just want to make clear, hopefully. There's currently hedge funds that are buying large amounts of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in particular. And there are places like Coinbase Custody and other custodial services for these high-value assets. So, Greg, I don't think that, and correct me please, that the custodial part, the manager keeping it securely for the ETFs is the problem. It's more just the acceptance and the willingness of the SEC to let it go forward.
I agree. I think that's right. I don't think it's a custodial thing as much as it is they're just the uncertainty of how do they regulate these markets. It was touched on in the hearing a little bit because they talked a little bit about, we can, through derivatives and futures, we can regulate it indirectly, but we can't ever regulate it, the Bitcoin market directly. And that's sort of the challenge.
There's not time for my conspiracy theory, Henry, but I have one.
Well, once we get into the more general part of the show, then you can bring your conspiracies in here. But let me get to one more clip from the hearing, and then we'll open this up to a wider discussion. This was about the aspect of ICOs and smart contracts that Senator Warner asked. I believe Chairman Clayton will be the first one to answer, but it could be Giancarlo. We'll find out.
And again, to my friend from Louisiana, we've got this. We're focused on a lot on Bitcoin and crypto assets, cryptocurrencies, and I think there's even definitional issues here. But you've got a whole new platform called Ethereum, where they're creating, file sharing or extra computer time.
I'm not sure what kind of assets those fall into. Are they potentially regulated within your realm, or if there is a tokenization exchange between excess computer time? I'm not sure where that fits at this point.
The definition of a security, I believe, the people who wrote the 34 Act and the 30 Act, they were smart. They did it on a principled basis, and they basically said, if you're giving people money in exchange for a future development of a business with the hope of a return, and whether that return comes in the form of server time or your ability to sell server time, it's a security.
But there have been, and I concur with the approach you've taken in terms of the ICOs, and I think there's been some very bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Yet certain ICOs, the SEC has not stopped. Others, they have stopped. Are you going to go back and re-review the ones that have gone forward?
Let me say another thing about the 33 and 34 Act. When they were written, there was a great recognition that there was a tremendous amount of securities activity in this country, and that we were going to rely on gatekeepers to help us enforce those, and liability to help us enforce those rules, accountants, lawyers, underwriters, sellers, and the like. I'm counting on those people to do their job, and I've made that clear.
Well, what a perfect cue from Chairman Clayton for the attorney in our midst.
That's right.
Greg Karsh, we're in your wheelhouse now. What about this with comments on the ICO, and that'll also open up the conversation to more of the things you do with your practice.
Yeah, well, this isn't the first time I've heard him say that, so that wasn't a surprise or news to me. There was a release that came out in the latter part of 2017 that said for the gatekeepers, including accountants and attorneys, you have a responsibility to assist us because and this came up in the hearing. They don't have the resources to, with all of the ICOs in 2017, they just don't have the resources to try to undo all of these unregulated securities that came through in 2017, so they've got a little bit of a difficulty with that. But I think the distinction, the interesting thing, and it came up, but not in it as completely as it maybe it could have, is this distinction between is a coin or a token a security? Is it a commodity, or is it something else? And it was alluded to that maybe this was a trade regulation and that's where we kind of get into the idea of tokens as utilities, which has come up often, is maybe they're not securities or commodities if they have some useful purpose. And as we develop purposes for tokenizing businesses and government on the blockchain and utilize the blockchain technology, we can start to see more scenarios in which there's utility to these coins and tokens, and it gets outside the realm of both of these agencies. That wasn't really developed or touched on, and it rarely is so far. But I think that's an important direction that we're hopefully heading in 2018. And that sort of leads into sort of a big part of what we're starting to see with our practice is.
Okay. And Greg, if you could hold your thought right there, we have one break to go to. We'll come back and we'll pick up right where we're left off. You're listening to The Henry Rain Show. If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bite Federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on The Henry Rain Show. Or just go to bitefederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BITE,
BYTE. That's 877-855-2983 or go to bikefederal.com.
I drink a cup of coffee and start to combing out my hair. I drink 40 cups of coffee. 40 cups of coffee.
Wow. Some people really love their coffee. But you'll experience much more to love than just the coffee at Mocha Joe's. The perfect spot for family and friends to relax with casual dining or enjoy the pastries and gourmet coffee shop at 3633 Cortez Road, West Bradenton. It will be love at first bite 7 days a week at Mocha Joe's. Thursday is prime rib night, Friday all-you-can-eat fish, and don't forget the world-famous $4.99 Saturday burger night. Vegetarian? On a gluten-free diet? You won't be left out at Mocha Joe's. There's something for everybody at Mocha Joe's. 3633 Cortez Road West. Don't believe me? Then call them up and ask for yourself at 941-753-7094. Open Sunday to Wednesday for breakfast and lunch. Thursday to Saturday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
40 cups of coffee waiting for you to come home.
Hey, this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock, make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
This segment of the Henry Raine Show is brought to you by Bike Federal, the Bitcoin ATM company, bringing Bitcoin to a location near you. It's the Henry Raine Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. And heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. to 1.30 p.m., although we may run over a little bit today. We have attorney Greg Karsh, World Block Legal, PA, worldblocklegal.io is the website, and the phone number that you can call to get more information about what you're hearing here for the office is 813-452-2000, 813-452-2000. And I see the internal audio here. People are having trouble with their headsets, but we'll continue anyway, going back to Greg. Before the break, we were getting ready to talk about some of the aspects of your practice, how you became specializing in blockchain, startups, ICOs, cryptocurrency, et cetera. Just anecdotally, I know at our meetup, and it also gives me a chance to promote the upcoming meetup, February 24th, 3:30 p.m. at Mocha Joe's on Cortez Road here in Bradenton. At our last meetup, we had, I think, at least two different people come up to Andy and I there with their potential ICOs, or I think one of them had actually developed the token. That was the medical one I'm thinking of, and then there was another one. Who was the third one? Because I was thinking the one for the gentleman we had a meeting with, and then the
there's another gentleman there, and he has an ICO coming up too. I can't think of his name, but he
give me his card.
That helps if I turn your mic back.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. They try to shut me up, folks.
Only as you resolve our technical aspects here. So, Greg, it seems like you can't throw a rock up in the air without it coming down and hitting somebody that's trying to launch an ICO. What is the first thing that you do or you ask when someone comes to you and says, I've got a great idea for an ICO?
Well, the first thing that we do is we kind of check and see where they are along the path, because, you know, in 2017, and this is why people are coming to us, in 2017 everyone was doing an ICO and making lots of money and raising money. That's what gets people to us. They want to do an ICO. But now they're starting to hear the SEC thinks that's illegal or it's a security and all those things. So now they have this sort of worry that, well, maybe we need to be careful how we do an ICO. So they come into us and they say, we want to do an ICO. And then we start to explain to them that ICOs are securities and there's things you need to do that. So we try to work with them depending on where they are in the process of developing their token, to determine exactly what the best way to finance if they haven't developed it, if they need funds, which a lot of times they're coming in and need funds to pay the developers or find developers to develop their idea a lot of times. And so we kind of go through the different options and ways to get to the funding to try to get them, depending on what their idea is, because, you know, we look at their idea and it's sort of, you know, the SEC is sort of giving us guidance that how we categorize a token or a coin is going to be a fact and circumstances kind of test. So that's sort of what we do, is we analyze the facts and circumstances around their token to see how we think the SEC might clarify it and what the proper way to classify it is and how do we get to that point. And then we backtrack and figure out the financing from there. And it just sort of depends. That's perfect. You know, the typical lawyer answer, right?
We just had the clips about how the SEC Chairman Clayton is saying they're going to be looking hard. They're going to make them go through the regulatory process. These people that are coming to you, how likely is it they're actually going to be able to bring a security to market with the SEC looking over their shoulder?
Well,
Is there an alternative way?
There are some. Well, what we do a lot of times, they're not, these startups particularly come into us and they're not ready to do a full security regulation offer or registration. That would be like an IPO, and few people are coming in with ICO ideas thinking they can do a full IPO and the cost and the time to do that and everything. So more often than not, we turn towards private placement type solutions and exemptions to securities laws to get funding, and then we get them to develop a token, and depending on, again, what their concept is going to be for their token, if it's going to be something that has utility and we can get it there, then we try to get them some funding to develop it if we can get them to a utility token.
So let's take one step back. Before we go on. You're talking about a private placement, and for the people out in the audience that haven't been in this situation, what do you mean by private placement? Are there restrictions on that?
There are restrictions on it, and this is where you get into you have to limit it yourself to accredited investors, and there are certain limitations as to how you can raise the money, and there are some reporting. You let the SEC know you're doing it, but it's essentially going to accredited investors and raising the money.
What's an accredited investor? Not all the details, but just in general.
Well, generally, it's an income or a wealth sort of test. So people that are making income generally of $200,000 a year for an individual or $300,000 for a married, or if your net wealth, not including your real estate, is $1 million or more, that qualifies you as an accredited investor. And
we're all screwed, Henry.
The SEC makes a distinction between that and a Main Street investor, which is what Clayton sort of calls unaccredited investors. He's out to protect.
Now, I got a question for you on that, because you just brought up a good point, and I wasn't aware of the limits that you had to be. You know, to me, that prevents people that don't have the means from investing into stuff. And for example, I'm an engineer by my trade, and so we see a lot of these hotel developments. And, you know, it's millionaires, and they get a group of 10 millionaires, and they all go in, and they throw in $1 million each, and they have the funding, and then they build a hotel, and they all get shares in that. Well, those common guys can't invest into those great opportunities. And with a coin, we would have that opportunity. Oh. But what you're saying is, unless we make $200,000 to $300,000 a year, we don't even have that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and that is the problem.
Excuse me, Greg. Yeah.
That's the problem Kodak has run into with launching their ICO, because they were going the route with trying to do it without the mean, you know, without offshoring the ICO, and they're in the process now. They had to delay because they're trying to confirm the accredited investors. And you know, Greg, man, come on, I'm here at WWPR. I'm making $300,000 a year. Why can't I just buy in? He's stunned.
He's actually stunned. You don't make $300,000 a year, Henry?
You don't believe me?
Doing the radio show?
What do I have to show you? I'll send you tapes.
So why can't the little guy invest into some of these, you know, to me, this is supposed to open up the... the space for little guys to invest. Why can't they do that?
Really, though, seriously, what proof do we have to provide you to be an accredited investor?
It depends. It depends on how you're raising the funds. There can be a certification process, but oftentimes, depending on how you're approaching the fundraise, if it's it can be just you sign an attest to the fact that you're an accredited investor, or there may be some additional information you have to require to verify somebody is an accredited investor in that scenario. And it's sort of a KYC kind of thing, but it's for just to verify income. So it's similar to that, though. But the answer to the question, you know, that's sort of the rub and the criticism of the sort of accredited investor scheme is that, you know, it keeps people from investing that could otherwise invest. But the idea is that, you know, they're trying to protect the investors, and there's a lesser reporting requirement on some of these financings where you limit it to accredited investors, and you can get certain exemptions to the securities law reporting requirements and so on. But it is a valid criticism, and it's one that has been made. It's sort of the balancing act of, you know, how do we protect investors from
let's
private.
Hear from the silence part of the panel before we run out of time here, because I would give him credit for as an investor.
Absolutely.
That's the contrarian, Augie, over here. What are your thoughts as you listen to this?
I agree with this restriction. I mean, it's a necessary thing. You know, there are people who know what they're doing, but if they don't have the funding and the backing or whatever you call it, the ownership of property or the ownership of regular assets or income, you've got people that may be qualified, but if they don't get together with somebody else to form a limited corporation or some such thing, I just think you know maybe the numbers are too high. That's probably where you're going to probably have to find the regulation change, I would guess.
Is it just income or net wealth?
It can be both.
It's either one. You meet it either by one or the other.
See that kind of takes away from the American dream, because I can tell you from my experience, and my business partner and I, we scraped together everything we had to come up with enough money to buy a restaurant. And we did that. And we scraped by for the first year. You know, and now we make tens of dollars a month, you know, and that's a great investment.
All the free coffee
get into restaurant. They should pass a regulation. You should not be able to open a restaurant up. I'm just letting you know now. But, you
just
know,
to
I mean,
protect investors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, I mean, so you're taking those dreams away from people to be able to invest into something that could make them rich. To me, that's
there,
what
there
it's doing.
There are pathways to investment. You can offer a piece of real estate that's worth whatever and do a buy, own, or purchase, which takes maybe not that much investment to get into it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But then that provides you with an asset.
Well, is what I'm saying is, let's say I got the group here, and we all agree we're going to throw in $10,000 and create a coin, the Henry Raines coin, and we're going to buy a piece of property, and we're going to rent that out. And as that grows, the coin gains value, but if Henry wants to sell his coin to his next-door neighbor, he has the right to do that. And, you know, and the value would be behind the backed asset. Now, is there something – are we not allowed to do that? I guess that's my question. Are we not allowed to do that?
What you just described would be would potentially find some trouble, because what you're doing is you're creating, in effect, I think they would treat that as a real estate investment company kind of scenario, where that would require that they would consider those token securities in that sense, because you're investing in those assets. So it doesn't get to the utility part, which, you know, and that's not clearly defined. So be clear here that the SEC has not given us a lot on the utility aspect. The Bunchy case that came out towards the end of the year, a restaurant token that they were trying, they claimed to be that they were going to be a utility token, and the SEC said you can't just say you're going to be one. You need to actually be one and have some substance behind that argument. And they ended up forcing them to give the money back to investors.
Well, the tip there was it was a restaurant token. That's definitely not investable.
Yeah. The term utility token, now not going to relying on the SEC, just as like trying to make a rule of thumb, what is a utility token as opposed to just a Bitcoin or a Litecoin?
That is very, very difficult to come to that conclude that definition with much certainty right now. It's a concept that's out there. I think the SEC recognized that that's something that could exist when they came out with their investigative report in July on the first sort of the first time they breached this subject a little bit. And they haven't given a lot of guidance as to what that is, but they sort of just recognized that we think that there could be such a thing. There are people, you know, private attorneys and others that are sort of trying to develop what that might look like. But I would tell you that it's you know, some of the things to consider is, is there some use that you can point to? And an example of that might be with a file share kind of a scenario where you use the token to access files or file sharing or file storage, and it's sort of a license or a membership interest in something where the token represents some sort of access or gas to run on the blockchain or something to that effect. That gives you a little sense of what that might be, but again, it's not very well defined, and there are lots of people trying to figure out exactly where that line is going to be. The SEC hasn't even given us much.
Well, I can tell you we have those already. We have those already. The SunPass. I mean, that's pretty much an ICO there. I mean, they did their own ICO. Now you buy tokens and you get to go on the interstate, right?
Yeah. That's a potential deal. That would be a use. That would be sort of an example of what a utility token might look like. And the idea is you've got networks of people, and when you have networks of people and you want to run and record all of the transactions between your network of people on a blockchain so that you have verified data of how your network is operating and can pull a variety of data from that because it's all verified data, that it gets you into a utility realm because you're using it for something other than what the Howey test would say. If you're taking money for profit to develop a profit on the efforts of other people, and that's sort of the quick sort of...
Andy, you need to give up all that engineering stuff and come work for Greg Karsh at World Block Legal.
Yeah,
he can put you to work.
I actually work for attorneys every once in a while.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Greg Karsh. As you can tell, he is an expert attorney in the realm of blockchain and ICO, cryptocurrency. We barely scratched the surface because we had so much of the committee that we wanted to get his commentary on because that was the news of the week. But, Greg, we'll have to have you back on, I hope, where you can go more in depth on some of these, and we can also go a little bit slower for the audience with some of these terms we're throwing at them.
Yeah, we can explain things a little bit more clearly, and also as time goes by, things will develop. This is an emerging area of law, and so it develops rapidly, and so we could have more definitions hopefully soon from the SEC. I think they're going to be very active here in the early part of 18, and we're going to start to get more on a lot of different fronts from them.
So if you're one of the three people that came up to us at the meetup, or you're one of the 20 that didn't come up to us that have a great idea for an ICO, then you want to talk to Greg Karsh. He's in Tampa. You can go to worldblocklegal.io or call the office at 813-452-2000. Although I think if you're not going to the website, you probably aren't ready for your ICO either.
No, I agree.
But Greg, thanks so much for joining us, and I hope we get to speak to you soon.
Yeah, I would love it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Pleasure talking. Well, that was a great interview. I just love those interviews where you get so much knowledge from somebody. I mean, it just blows your mind away.
Yeah, I think we have to have him back and start
Definitely.
With a more primer approach to this.
Reestablish definitions. I think blockchains have to be better defined as to what being put forward.
Absolutely.
So when he was talking about a utility token, one of the thoughts that came to my mind is that sounds like every single coin that Alex brings us as his coin of the week.
Yeah. From
so
Dragon to Dragon Chain to
a coin of the week for us.
Here we go. Drum roll. We need to have the drum roll in here, Henry, for his coin of the week.
Yeah, I have one. Colleen actually gave me a tip on this one at 50 cents. I should have got it. It's called VeChain. It's the number one talked about crypto on the internet right now.
Okay, well, let's slow down.
Okay.
First of all, Colleen, I've heard that name somewhere
Colleen.
Before. Yeah, now, tell us who she is.
That's Crypto Noob Girl. She's one of the coolest people I ever met.
On Twitter. You got a Crypto Noob right Girl, and you follow her, and you'll be one of her 4,000 closest followers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so she gave you this tip.
Yeah,
so we should have her here. She needs to be on the radio.
I know, more often.
Yeah, where she's at. She's slaving right now somewhere.
Okay.
Well, hopefully she's listening. Hello, Colleen.
And then the name of the coin is?
It's called VeChain. The symbol is V-E-N. It came out in August around 30 cents. It dropped to as low as 5 cents. Colleen told me to buy it at 50 cents in December. Now it's at 4.50. It's definitely a great coin. What they do is they're like Walmart uses the technology already, not VeChain, obviously, but they track products and stuff through the blockchain. And I think it's really good technology. I think the technology is going to last. It's something that's worth investing
okay.
in.
Okay, again, I got because I've missed all these. I got to slow this down so that even somebody like me can. So, did you say Walmart uses it?
No, Walmart doesn't use it, but they use the same technology.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's using it now?
They have no partnerships right now. They're just started. But they're.
And it, what does it track again?
Products.
Such as.
Like your cell phone.
Like at the wholesale level, the retail level?
Well, if you ship a package. You ship a package, it tracks it for you in real time. Have you seen the Verizon commercials? Verizon's doing it now.
Yeah.
It's amazing technology that they bring the fish in off, and they dump them in this big bucket, they throw ice in there, and boom, they put this package in there, and it's a blockchain tracker, and it tracks it for everywhere it's been, temperature, everything. I mean, it's
So why wouldn't Walmart or one of these other companies that's doing this already, or FedEx or the U.S. Postal Service or Amazon?
No,
so why are people going to go to this one?
Well, it's more of a one for that. If you don't develop your own, you just want to use the technology. Say Alex wants to come up with an idea to ship his eBay stuff, and he can use that to use it.
Yeah, what they learned too, crypto is international, so like it's not isolated just to Walmart. No, nothing like this. Every country's doing this.
Not to diss Alex because his coins of the week pay off for people, but so many of these things, it seems like the
don't get me going, Henry.
Going to shake them out.
How many cell phone companies are there? How many cell phones are there? There's millions of them. You know, this world is
like
so
three
big.
Cell phone companies.
We can't have monopolies out there. We have to spread it out. Small businesses need to. There's Mocha Joe's. You know, we got McDonald's, Starbucks, Mocha Joe's. Where are you going to get your coffee at?
Mocha Joe's.
Yeah, Mocha Joe's. You know. You got to let the little guys survive, or little guys have to get a chance, or we're going to have a monopoly out
there. So who gets the better deal when they go to buy products, Mocha Joe's or Starbucks?
Mocha Joe's, because they're number one.
Absolutely get better prices.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Starbucks.
Well, I'm so confused. I was thinking that the business is consolidating from the consolidation power group.
Absolutely.
So,
you
should all go, well, nobody should go and buy a restaurant on Cortez Road.
No.
But all the other side of Tampa Bay, you guys all go open your own restaurant and get rich like Mocha Joe's.
I think the question here is, it's not who gets the better prices, whatever, it's who the customer wants. You know, you got Boost Mobile, Sprint, T-Mobile, all that. I like T-Mobile. When I get my coffee, there's Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, all that.
There's still
I
only three. Well, there's four. AT&T, there's Verizon, there's T-Mobile,
you got Asia.
And Sprint.
Don't forget the Asia companies, the companies in India, Europe.
In the U.S.
Yeah,
I can only buy who's in the U.S.
But this is an international market. We're not in a American market
okay.
right now.
All right.
International.
In the short term, I'm not disagreeing with anything Alex says. And go back and listen to all the podcasts and the coins of the week and track them for yourself. And if this one has Colleen behind it, I think we should all... I'm not giving any advice. Excuse me. I'm not giving any advice. But we should all follow Colleen on Twitter at Crypto Noob Girl.
That's
that
correct.
We can all agree on.
That's good advice.
All right. So we've run over a little bit today. We want to thank Greg Karch. Any last words, Augie?
Oh, well, I think this Karch fellow needs to come back, and I think people really should listen to him. I think it's a very basic approach to what's coming and what currency is going to really mean long term. The technologies are being shared, and there's a lot of danger out there in the exchanges, so be careful.
All right. Andy?
Everyone stay. HODL. I'm just going to say that. HODL.
TradingView.com. I'm going to say Follow Andy at GoldBug1 on TradingView.com. Check out SeekingCryptos.com with Andy and Mark P. Markets, who was on last week's show. Go to the podcast. We want to see all of you at the meetup on the 24th. That's Saturday at 3:30, 2 weeks from today, at Mocha Joe's. And we'll be back on the radio next week with another Henry Rain Show.
Here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK.